As we continue this theme of freedom for this retreat, the general meaning of the ancient word for freedom, something sometimes it'd be mutti, vimoksha, moksha, is has the connotations of to be released, to loosen, to untie. And we find this very clearly in the ancient texts, that the description of becoming awakened is often described as becoming unfettered, or having the knots untied, released. And the emphasis here is what we're released from, what gets untied. And the idea of being all knotted up is a modern metaphor, and have knots inside, and to have those be untied, to be released, is a big part of this. And looking at this, I have three poems for this talk. And the first one is titled, A Time to Let Go. Whether you love or hate the clouds, don't fasten them to a hitching post. If you want to see in the dark night, let the clouds drift away so the full moon can shine on you. So since the earliest time in Buddhism, the full moon has been a metaphor for the awakened mind. The full moon on a cloudless night. So what that means is a time when there's nothing obscuring the moon, and then it's quite inspiring and beautiful, not only to have the moon floating in the sky, but also the way that it lights up the landscape at night. It can be exquisitely beautiful to see the world when the moon is shining on it. I've been camping outdoors in the dark wild, far from artificial lights, and to have the full moon shining on the trees and the ground and the waters, it's really exquisite. So the full moon as our mind. And there's all kinds of things that obscure the clouds that come through. And the way this poem is written, it says, whether you love or hate the clouds, don't fasten them to a hitching post. So whatever comes through the mind, and there can be wonderful things that come through, and there can be terrible things that come through the mind, and regardless, they can, if we get involved with them, they'll obscure the fullness of the mind, of the heart, the full heart, the full mind. And so it's important not to tie our thoughts, our stories, our ideas, our preferences to a hitching post. Whether things are good and beautiful or whether they're terrible, if what we want is the clarity of the full mind, the clear mind, the freedom of a mind which is not obscured, then let things arise like a clouds come and let them blow by. And of course, it's something ridiculous about fastening clouds to a hitching post. You're supposed to take a big rope, a lasso, and throw it up around the clouds and pull it down and hold it from going away. you know, of course we know that doesn't work. And so this poem, the metaphor of this poem, is a little bit maybe making fun of, or maybe pointing out the that in some unusual, kind of unexpected way, we can't really cling to anything. Anything that obscures the mind or obscures our freedom. The notion of clinging, of attachment, of holding on, always comes with ignorance. And part of that ignorance is that we think there is something there that's solid enough to hold on to. But it's only so because we think it that way. We imagine it is so, and then in the imagination we kind of reify and support these ideas that this is the way it is. But ideas and thoughts, there's actually nothing there to hold on to. Have you ever tried to weigh a thought? You know, pull it down and put it on a scale? It has no weight. Have you ever tried to, you know, find a box that you can store a thought in? How big does that box have to be? Thoughts don't really have size. They don't have weight. They don't have substance. They are the ephemeral. They exist and they don't exist. Maybe, you know, clouds exist more substantially than thoughts and ideas do. And yet, we invest so much importance in our ideas, so much importance in our fantasies, our memories, and our projections of the future, that in some ways they become more real than what is real. More real than the solid wood of this table right here that I'm sitting in front of. And this, you know, strange thing that to be a human being, where we need an integral part and a wonderful part of our human life are the thoughts, the stories, ideas, concepts, memories that we have. But they're kind of as ephemeral as clouds. Don't tie them to a hitching post. Allow them to come through with no disrespect to them, but allow them to blow through. And when they blow away, then the moon is there, the full moon. One of the, I think, wonderful things about the metaphor of the full moon, standing for the mind, is that from our human perspective, we talk about there being a full moon, a partial moon, half moon, a new moon. But in fact, the moon itself is always full. It's only because of the shadows that fall on the moon. The shadows are our shadows that fall on the moon, the shadow of the earth, that we can say it's half moon or quarter moon or something. So it is with the mind. All kinds of shadows fall on it. All kinds of clouds come in the way and obscure it. And we only see it partially. And part of the Dharma path is to allow the clouds to evaporate, allow the clouds to disperse, so that we see the full moon, the full heart, the full mind, the fullness when nothing obscures it. And the idea in Buddhism is that what obscures it has a lot to do with what we fasten to the hitching post, what we hold on to tight, what we tie our ropes around and get knotted up in. And so to begin to understand, to not just understand, but to feel almost somatically, physically, to how we get tied up, how we hold on, or how we resist and stop. Sometimes we don't tie the clouds, the hitching posts, but we put up fences or resistance. We stand in front of the clouds and push them back, hoping that we can stop them from coming through. So part of what Buddhism does, Buddhist practice, is practice we do, is to begin appreciating not only the clouds that come across and see, make us see, we get that blocks the view, where we get stuck and caught, but more importantly, to see how we get fastened to them, how we react to them in such a way that we hold on to them or push them back or stop them or something. We reify them. And in this Buddhist tradition, it's said that early Buddhism, that there's three major, there's lots of ideas, lots of lists, as you, some of you know, but I want to mention one of the primary lists for these obstructions and that flow through. And the language, they're called asavas in Pali, A-S-A-V-A, which means, kind of means to flow, an outflow or an inflow, that there's things that move. And the idea is to let things move, keep moving, and give all things their freedom. And don't tie them up, don't block them. So there's three primary areas, and these are kind of more colloquial English expressions of ideas or words for them. One is that we tie up to the hitching post our ideas and desires for all kinds of sense comfort, sensual pleasures. And in Buddhism, the human realm is called the sensual realm, because human beings are very much driven and oriented around the sensual world. Now, it isn't that we're necessarily, craving or actively think we're pursuing sensual pleasure or sensual comfort, but it doesn't take too much analysis to realize that for most people who can, there's a tremendous amount of time is spent getting things just right, the pillows just right, and maybe the food just right, or the temperature just right, or the clothes just right, not just to take care of our basic needs, but so that there's a certain kind of comfort and pleasure that we have. Or a lot of time is spent trying to avoid being uncomfortable. And this pursuit of pleasure and protection from discomfort is nothing really inherently wrong with that, except when we tie it to the hitching post. When we get caught, and this is like a whole central theme that we're addicted to or attached to and spend a lot of time doing, is constantly being concerned with comfort and what's pleasant and unpleasant. And if we do so, then it obscures the full moon. We're preoccupied. And so we're so caught up in this that we don't notice the big picture. And the big picture that we're looking for in Buddhism is the big picture of awakening, of freedom, the open space, the clear night sky where the full moon comes out in. The second of these three big things flowing through obstructions is our stories. All the stories we live by, the stories about what happened to us in the past, the stories of what we think is going to happen in the future, the fantasies that we spend our time living in, and sometimes delusions of grandeur, sometimes delusions of or fantasies of danger, and we live in stories. Connected to stories is we live in our opinions of things, and we have strong opinions of what is right, what is wrong, strong opinions of philosophies and all kinds. And in this world of stories and opinions and philosophies, there's nothing inherently wrong with them, except if we spend too much time in them, they obscure the big picture. They obscure the vision that we can have of freedom, of the full moon, of the clarity of the night sky or the clear air that can happen. And even worse, if we hitch it to a hitching post and tie it down, and then we get stuck and things can't move, and things can't move away and float away in the wind, or they can't, we get caught in it, we end up holding on tight to the rope and throwing more ropes around them, and the more we want to, insist on having those stories, insist on having those opinions, proving ourselves right, being better than others, or showing them that we know what's up, all kinds of ways in which we get caught in these stories. Some of these stories are stories about who we are, stories of who, what makes us up and what defines us. And particular phases of human life, we will tell ourselves different stories about ourselves, our life experience, how we've come to be what we are, how we're going to be something else. And these stories are often, and many of the opinions we have a very close relationship to our self-concept, how we think about ourselves. And that's one of the ropes that we use for tying things to the hitching post. Or maybe this concepts and ideas of self is the hitching post that we try to tie everything onto. And then the last of those three obstructions that this practice is meant to overcome, clear away, clear the air from, is in fact this very thing I talked about, is the stories and ideas we have around self, self-concept. And I believe Matthew is going to talk about this more tomorrow. But here also, the self, who we are, who we think we are, who we want to be, and even sometimes who we are authentically, and a fair amount of the time, it's just too important for us. It's overemphasized, over-obsessed about it, over-trying to prove ourselves, apologize for ourselves, change ourselves, help ourselves, improve ourselves, escape from ourselves, all kinds of, so much in relationship to this idea of self. And again, there's nothing inherent wrong with these ideas. Some of them are actually quite helpful and needed to go about our life. But they can be clouds that obscure the full moon. We can be so caught up in them and concerned with them that we don't see clearly. And worse than that, we can fasten ourselves to them. The self fastens itself to itself, in a sense. So one of the tasks of mindfulness is to see, understand, and become sensitive to the nature of these clouds, nature of the ways in which we get fettered and tied up. And it's kind of easy to see sometimes if you're doing something like mindfulness meditation, where you're trying to stay in the present moment. And the chances are, whatever takes you away from the present moment, the chances are fairly high, I think, that that represents something in some way or other that you're attached to. Something or other that, because the mind does go so easily into that and gets hooked into these other thoughts and ideas, it chances are high that it begins to obscure the fullness, the beauty, the completeness, the wholeness of your mind, of your heart, of your being. And there's a loss of freedom there in the way that we get fettered to those or tied to those. And the more strongly we find ourselves being pulled into the world of ideas, thoughts, desires, away from something so innocent and simple as staying with the breath, the more we're experiencing how tight that knot is, how strong the fetter is. And that's just something to be in awe of, maybe even to marvel at, that you get to experience and see what many people don't see and experience. Many people have no clue how much they're obstructed in their vision, how much they're tied down to their ideas and concepts and their needs and desires. And when you get to do this mindfulness practice, you get to see it. It's a great benefit to do that. And I say that with some enthusiasm and some delight that you get to see how you're caught for two reasons. The alternative is not very nice. The alternative to being delighted is to be upset or distressed with our attachments. The other reason to be delighted is we're starting to see how this mind works, how suffering is born, and we're starting to see where the cracks can appear, where the clouds can begin to part. We start noticing how we can untie the ropes. We can start noticing how we can allow the clouds to drift and continue going on without bringing on more clouds and more clouds. And it's a fantastic thing. This is the way forward. It's the path to freedom. And to have discovered for yourself, in your own direct experience, that path. This is a really one of the great moments, great experiences of a human life. And we see that, but it's a path that can only be found in contrast to or in relationship to how we're caught, how we're stuck, where the obstructions are, where the afflictions are. So it's rather unfortunate that there's this, you know, can be that just two-sided aspect to all this. That yes, to mature into a full human being, but certainly into a person who's enlightened, it takes a lot of honesty and a lot of clarity and willingness to see the ways that we are caught, the ways that we are preoccupied in comfort and stories and ideas and thoughts of self. And at the same time, to see it as there's cracks that lead to freedom, cracks that lead to the absence of suffering, the cracks that lead to the open space of clarity. And that to see these two coming together. And at first it might just be a crack, it might just be a hint. Maybe there's no crack at all, it's just it gets a little bit more opaque and you can kind of begin seeing through it. But over time, the balance shifts so that there's more clarity, there's more freedom, there's more absence of obstructions, more happiness than there is suffering and obstructions. But it takes this willingness, this maturity, to sit upright and sit still and be willing to see what in the world is going on here in our minds and our hearts. And, you know, it's not necessarily good news in there always, and some of it is downright embarrassing what goes on inside of us. But it's a great thing if you're able to kind of feel a certain deep sense of rightness, maybe even delightfulness, happiness, in knowing this is the way forward, to see it and know this, to really be there unflinchingly and unapologetically, just to see the clouds. Everyone has clouds. It's not like you're the first person who has attachments and clinging. But you're one of the rare people who begins to see it with greater and greater clarity. It's a good thing. So what's it like to be without obstruction? So the second poem that I have here is called without obstruction. The clouds are gone, the night sky crystal clear. The full moon floats peacefully. Asking for nothing, interfering with nothing, the moonlight reveals the way forward. So the clouds are gone. So this is a metaphor for an awakened mind. It is possible, sometimes in moments, sometimes longer, it is possible to begin experiencing for oneself that it is possible to have no ties, no fetters, no clinging, to have the heart and the mind open, or maybe rather than open, we can say completely clear. The clarity of a clean, pure heart. The clarity of an open, cleansed mind, just clear and open, is a fantastic thing. It can be extremely inspiring to have even a moment of it passing through before the clouds come back, and to know, oh, this is actually possible. This is worthwhile. It's not worthwhile to continue to suffer. It's not really worthwhile to cling and hold on. There's a better opportunity, a better alternative to that. And it's one of the great things. If you have compassion for the suffering of the world, and you want to alleviate suffering in the world, maybe you're on the bodhisattva path, if you know, if you have tasted even a small glimmer of what it's like to have this absence of obstructions, this absence of suffering, absence of clinging, then you know what the full potential is of the absence of suffering. Then you're in a position to support and help people with the greatest good, the greatest absence of suffering. And because I can reassure you that there's a lot of good you can do for other people. But even if you do a lot of good for them, if they haven't really understood the depths of their own suffering and seen seen that full moon, they will continue to suffer in ways. But if you really know the full possibility of freedom from suffering, then you can offer people the greatest help. So the clouds are all gone, the night sky crystal clear, the full moon floats peacefully. Imagine the mind, the heart, peaceful, floating peacefully, with nothing obscuring it. There's the perfection of the moon, the ease of the moon, the peace of the moon. One of the primary descriptions of an awakened person that the Buddha gave is someone who's peaceful. And to have the heart at peace, to have the mind at peace, at ease, it is possible, and it is possible to take care of oneself and to take care of the world that we need to take care of with that peaceful mind. It's not necessary to sacrifice the peaceful mind in order to do what we need to do for this world of ours. In fact, we probably do it better and more, maybe with more gusto, efficiency or effectiveness, if all the responsibilities we have to do, we can do peacefully. But it's so easy to be pulled into the world of worry and upset and anger and distress around things going on around us. And some of it is because it's learned, because we show our love if we worry. we show we care if we get anxious and kind of get all speeded up. We show we care if we get angry. So anyway, to learn, like the moon, full moon floating peacefully in the clear sky. And the moon and the moonlight doesn't ask for anything. This is maybe one of the more, I think, profound aspects of this particular little poem. The moon asks for nothing. The moonlight asks for nothing. And the moonlight interferes with nothing. I haven't heard of anyone who, any impact of harm that moonlight has done on where the moonlight lands. It kind of touches things very sweetly, lightly, doesn't disturb anything. But that moonlight that doesn't disturb anything, doesn't interfere with anything, it shows us the way forward. It's in that peacefulness, in that non-obscuration, in that not interfering with things or not getting entangled in things, not harming anything, that that we see how to live this life. There's something about letting go into this peaceful place that it teaches us or provides us with the map or the road in which to follow our way step by step. One of the reasons people are afraid of awakening and this, you know, profound peace is that they feel like they won't be able to take care of themselves or find their way in this world. But when we experience it, it provides a guide. It is, becomes a teacher for us. It shows us the way forward in this marvelous way. So to ask for nothing and to interfere with nothing, is it possible to live a life that way? Is it possible to live needing nothing? Of course you need things like food and things, but is it possible to have a mind, a heart, that is at ease, happy, peaceful with itself, and doesn't have this impulse or habit of needing more, wanting things to be different? Is that possible? Asking for nothing, interfering with nothing, the moonlight reveals the way forward. And then finally, the third poem. And this one is titled, Now You See It, Now You Don't. Hurting nothing, the moon is reflected in the delicate morning dew. The idea of the moon reflected in the dew is a Japanese Buddhist poetic metaphor that the moon is in the sky, and the way humans might see it is in the drop of the, in the dewdrop. But the thing about the dewdrop, it might reflect the moon, the full moon, but the dewdrop is not going to be around for long. Hurting nothing, the moon is reflected in the delicate morning dew. Giving life to everything, the sun dries up the dew. So this is maybe a little bit complicated. This is a very simple four-line poem. Sometimes what we see is not really the full moon. The idea of becoming fully awakened and free is a beautiful goal, but sometimes we have little glimmers of it. We see that awakening, that freedom, that peacefulness, that fullness in the ephemeral world that we live in, the changing world. We see it briefly as we live our life. And then all too quickly it dries up, disappears. And that's kind of the nature of, for a long time in practice, that comes and then it goes, it comes and it goes. We settle into the practice, it feels really great. We feel more connected to ourselves, more clear, more present. Might feel some wonderful feeling of integrity or harmony, wholeness. And then it goes. And then we practice and maybe it comes back or something else happens in our life and there we are with it again. And then it dries up. The sun does interfere with things. The sun does gives us life. One way or the other, our human life, our lived life, animate life on this planet comes, you know, is dependent on the sun. And the sun both gives life and it kind of takes it away. So you see that with this life of ours comes and goes. It gives and takes away. And so in this very world that we live in, the dewdrop that reflects the moon will also dry up. Maybe only to reappear the next night, next morning. So what I love about this kind of Japanese idea of the moon and the dewdrop is it reflects a kind of realism that sometimes gets lost in Buddhism if it only talks about awakening and attaining freedom as if that's the end of the story. I think for many of us that we live in a world where things come and go and rise and pass, and that part of learning to be free is to let the clouds come and let the clouds go. Allow the full moon to come, allow the full moon to go, and to move through, and to learn how not to fasten anything to a hitching post, how not to even to fasten ourselves to the hitching post of self, how to give everything its freedom. And I think this is one of the really, I think, wonderful ideas about freedom, the theme of the retreat, is to the degree to which people, when they hear the idea that the goal is freedom, to really be free, liberated, they all too easily think that they will become a liberated person. They will become free. And we're back to the hitching post, the self, another story. I will become free. I will be the most free person on my block. But maybe it's not you that will become free. Maybe freedom is your gift that you give to the entire world. And it's a gift that you allow, you give everything that you encounter, you give it its freedom. You encounter your friend, and you give your friend freedom from you, from your need, your clinging, your desires. Let your friend be free from you. You give freedom. The things of the world, give them their freedom. The awakening and freedom is a gift. And one of the things you'll see if you read the ancient texts of the Buddha, how often he emphasizes that one of the consequences of living free is no longer causing harm. No longer having any malevolence to this world of ours. And when we see there's so much harm being caused in small and big ways, maybe this is what makes freedom such a desirable goal. Not freedom for its own sake, not freedom for me to be free, but maybe because I become non-malevolent, harmless, dedicated to harmlessness in my efforts to, in my gift of giving freedom to all things. The metaphor that the Buddha uses for the life of someone who lives with this kind of harmless freedom is, I don't know if, is that of a bee that goes around and collects pollen from the flower without harming the flower. So for us to be like, you know, liberated like the moon, like bees, getting, living our lives, not harming anything, in order to get what we need to live our lives and to be alive and feel good. And what's it like? What's it like to have the full moon, the glow of the full moon, light our way? Light up this life of ours. And I'll end this talk with a poem, a verses by the Buddha. It's kind of like the, this, I think of this poem as the anthem for Vipassana practitioners. So this is our anthem. Don't chase the past or long for the future. The past is left behind. The future is not yet reached. Right here, where it is, have insight into whatever phenomena that has arisen. Not faltering, and not agitated. By knowing it, one develops the mind. Ardently, do what should be done today. Who knows, death may come tomorrow. There is no bargaining with mortality and his great army. Whoever dwells thus ardent, active day and night, is, says the peaceful sage, one who has an auspicious day. So it's starting to get dark here in California. The night is coming. And it's been a long tradition of Buddhist meditators sitting into the evening, into the night. And as you sit for this evening and maybe into the night, may you be the moon. And if you're not yet full, even if you're a new moon, just a sliver, the new moon always grows to fullness. May you sit and see yourself clearly, so that your moonlight can show you the way. Thank you.